Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and this is your listener ramble show. And delighted to be joined by a special guest, as I mentioned. If you're on the YouTube channel, the special guest is no real surprise, as he's on the video already. But if you're on the audio, I have the currently an associate professor of teaching philosophy at The Ohio State University and the director of the newly formed, well, it was a few months ago, Visible College, Dr. Stephen Brown. Stephen, welcome back.
Good to see you, sir.
Very good to have you on. And I said this, I think, last time, but genuinely, loads of folk ask me, when are you getting Stephen back on? I don't know why, you know, but, you know.
Me either. I've been starting to get people comment on the weird things on my shelves. I think that's what it is. They're trying to get the inventory.
Is that what it is? They just want you back on to look at the camera for a little while.
So I'm behind my head.
There's like, it's like Easter eggs behind you as to what you actually think. The questions and the answers are just purely coincidental. It's everything in the background.
That's right.
But Stephen, for folks who don't know who you are, maybe they're listening to this for the first time, they've only been involved in the podcast for a couple of weeks getting into the whole UFO topic. A little snapshot of who you are, please, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So I've been here at Ohio State for a little more than 20 years now. Came originally as a graduate student to the philosophy department, and then I've been a lecturer. I've worked for the Ethics Center here, and now I'm what's called a teaching professor. So I teach pretty big classes like Asian philosophies, intro philosophy, philosophy of religion, philosophy of art, death and the meaning of life, stuff like that. And that's my day job. I wasn't paying any attention to UFO stuff until David Grush in the summer of 23. And I've been frantically trying to understand what's going on and, you know, talk to other people who are kind of in the scholarly sphere thinking about this stuff. A little while ago, last summer especially, we started collecting this group of academics and other kinds of scholars that we call the Visible College. We're at about 50 people-ish at this point. Most of us have PhDs in something or advanced degrees in something. A lot of us are working in academia, but not all of us. And it's kind of an informal consortium of people. Some of us are working on projects together. We have a mostly weekly meeting where one of us will make a short presentation to the rest of the crew, and then we'll have an internal discussion about that. We've been talking about a few things that we're going to push out publicly. If you look at the website now, there's a couple of papers up there. One on the experience of ontological shock, and another one on the importance of children as we, human society transition through this confusing moment. There's a few other things that are kind of in the works but are not up yet. And that's what we do. Yeah, we're not a formalized group. It's kind of a, in a way, it's almost a support group for people with a scholarly background who want to connect to other people and have interesting conversations. And we're just trying to be a connective hub right now.
Yeah, awesome. And if folks haven't heard Stephen yet, we've got a couple of interviews. When I've spoke to Stephen, go back and check those out. And this is the listener ramble, so this is your chance to ask questions. Yep. And for this one, Stephen, I put out to the audience just to say, on Patreon and YouTube, how would things like the Nazca mummies, pyramid structures, religious origins, all having a non-human influence or alien, we're going to use that word a lot, impact society, our thinking, anything around those topics, more than welcome. So kind of ancient influence on that. Our first kind of interaction was around the Nazca mummies, those bodies that came up last year. People ask for updates on that. And if you haven't heard the interviews with Stephen came on first time. You were chatting, finding it interesting. You were just dipping your toe into the topic real properly. You then came on again because you felt you were maybe changing your mind on it a little bit. Maybe there was less to it from an alien perspective than you thought initially, but there was some intrigue still. Where do you sit with that whole situation now?
Yeah, so I'm pretty much roughly the same place that I was when the second time that I came on. So in a nutshell, that is, it still seems to me unlikely that the best explanation of those many different types of bodies is that they are modern hoaxes. I suspect they are not modern hoaxes. I expect that they are ancient, but they do seem to be anciently modified human bodies, sometimes using animal parts as part of the modification technique. So the little ones, the ones that were shown the congressional hearing in Mexico, those appear to be human infants. The skulls have been removed and replaced with a portion of a llama skull. The larger ones seem to be full-sized human adults with elongated skulls. There's been some dispute over whether the skulls actually have a volume that can or cannot be explained by the skull binding that we've seen elsewhere. The people that I am closest to do believe that it is consistent with skull binding. We don't need an explanation beyond that. And so the people that I'm most connected to remain puzzled mostly about the hands and the feet. And how they ended up to be the way they are. And yeah, it's a very puzzling set of cases. People are jumping to a lot of conclusions very quickly, one way or the other. Most people are jumping to, this is a modern hoax, don't worry about it. And then there's this kind of intrepid band of people who are saying, no, we think that they're desiccated alien bodies. And there's a very small group of people like me who think it's none of the above. But they do seem to be ancient dried bodies that have been modified in very peculiar and confusing ways. It's not obvious how they could have been modified like that. And it's still on the table that there's some kind of a hybridization or genetic modification hypothesis. Although just personally, me and my folk are more inclined to think the modifications are physical, either done surgically before the body, before the person, the individual was before they died, or as part of a burial preparation ritual.
Well, that's a good place to start then with the listener questions. So Nick says, and I'm going to read some bigger questions here, Stephen, so get your notepad and pen out. I'll plug an interesting rabbit hole that relates to the Nazca mummies and alien bodies in general, and that is a subject in alchemy literature of homunculus. Or should I say, is that homunculi or homunculus?
Well, homunculus would be singular and homunculi would be plural.
Oh, okay, so he's put of the homunculus, but yeah, okay, there we go. If you or anyone isn't aware, the idea of a homunculus, a kind of small, soulless person created from common materials through alchemy or ritual magic. There are also a number of parallels with the golem from Jewish folklore. I first stumbled upon this topic when I read that one of Jack Parsons' colleagues believed he was trying to create a homunculus when an accidental explosion took his life. This is also interesting when you consider his death occurred a month before the massive UFO wave in 1952, culminating in the DC chase. This is all a messy, half-baked theory, but I'm convinced there's a strong connection with homunculus folklore and much of the modern and ancient NHI stories. It's often said that grey aliens are not in fact a real species, but a kind of artificial life form or biological robot. Would love to know if you or any other research have taken up this topic. A few things kind of mashed in there, Stephen. Do you want to give us your take on that?
Yeah, this is a fascinating question. So first of all, I'm also very intrigued by Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley, this kind of Southern California early 20th century community of, they were like an occult secret society. And I want to be clear that there's pretty clearly some objectionable behaviors going on there, even for people who are, fairly generous in how they want to think about sexuality. It does look like there was some exploitation of minors in particular. So we do want to be, recognize that we're talking about some complicated issues here.
Yeah.
Jack Parsons believed he was the Antichrist. He tried to, together with Crowley, summon the spirit of Babylon through some rituals involving apparently blood and semen. And yeah, so there was a lot going on. And then he was, of course, also associated with the founding of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California, which is where a lot of the probes and satellites and stuff get built. My dad actually worked at JPL for a number of years when I was a teenager. Parsons dies under strange circumstances, and it's unclear exactly what he was up to, but I've heard this theory before. It's also very clear that Parsons and Crowley and that whole community, out of which, by the way, comes L. Ron Hubbard and kind of the beginnings of Scientology, also associated with that community, they definitely believed that they were having conversations with non-human beings of some kind, spiritual beings, they were using this technique developed by John Dee, who was, I forget how long ago this was, but many hundreds of years ago, I want to say 1600s, who developed a technique for trying to summon and communicate with angels. And they were apparently using this kind of technique to be in communication with whichever beings they were in communication with. This is all very interesting for people like me who have a history of studying religion, and also people like me who are thinking about what non-human intelligence might look like. Of course, there might be beings who evolved on other planets and flew here in warp drive spaceships, right? There could be beings like that. I suspect there probably are beings like that, but there does seem to also be this other layer to what's going on, which is much more perplexing, which looks, sometimes people use this term interdimensional or spiritual. Yeah. So these guys, Crowley and Parsons and friends, like they believed that they were talking to some beings. That was part of what they were up to. So with regard to the homunculus thing.
Just before you go there, can I just ask then? So is that, because I wasn't sure on the connection here. So when he says accidental explosion takes his life, it's interesting this occurred 1 month before the UFO wave over DC in 1952. are they suggesting here that the communication was going out to something and that wave was because of that communication? Is that the suggestion there?
I actually wasn't familiar with that correlation, but that doesn't surprise me. I'm just quickly looking at the at the Jack Parsons Wikipedia page just to confirm some of the dates here. But yeah, so he does pass away on June 17th, 52, which is right in the middle or right at the beginning of that that massive wave that did result in the DC appearances that I find very compelling. So I don't know. I'll look into that myself too.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that before. So sorry, I was just curious.
No, but, this is great. This is why informed listeners are such a good thing. I mean, you know, I'm a teacher, and I'm always learning stuff from students. So good questions make for a good discussion. So I don't know. That could be the suggestion. There certainly is a correlation there. Correlation is not causation, right? Murder rates and ice cream sales go up at the same time, but it's because it's summer and people are hot. It's not because ice cream causes murder. It could just be a correlation, but it's an intriguing correlation that's worth pondering. Did you want to talk about the homunculus thing?
Yeah. Because I'm not too familiar with this. Outside of a podcast I listen to, there's a bunch of Australian/New Zealand based guys who do a Plumbing the Death Star, really funny series. If you're a geek and into comic booky movie stuff, nice. Check out their stuff. They done one, Jackson Bailey Spooks America, and they done a whole episode on homunculus. So that's the only time I'd really heard of it much. So if you could just go into whatever you can, that'd be great.
So I'm not hugely aware of this, but I mean, of course, there are many mythological tales of sorcerers, magicians, etc., who create some kind of an animated body, maybe made out of clay or metal or the bodies of something else, right? Frankenstein's monster is something along these lines. This is a hypothesis that I took pretty seriously when I was trying to figure out what was going on with the Nazca mummies, and exactly for the kind of reason that you were talking about. There does seem to be some evidence that the grays, or at least some of the grays, don't look like fully evolved biological beings, but might be kind of purpose-built biological robots. If you look at the science fiction of Blade Runner, right, like the replicants are like this. So they're made biologically, but they are they're constructed beings with specific purposes, sort of like we would build a robot, but you'd build it out of biological stuff. Who knows? Like, could you take the body of an infant and stitch it together with some of these other things, like the back part of a llama skull, and then do something to it? And then, you know, it could be an operative.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
Being of some kind, in principle, yes. With the Nazca mummies, there's reasons to be concerned about whether that's actually feasible, given the way that the joints and stuff work slash don't look like they would work.
Yeah.
But who knows, right? Like, once we're this far down the rabbit hole, it's very perplexing to even ponder what might be possible. So let's say that, for instance, the Greys were or are like biological constructs of some kind, biobots. How did they come into existence? Might they have come into existence through something like, you know, CRISPR genetic engineering processes like we're beginning to develop now? Sure, of course. Or, I mean, I think one of the things that AI just accomplished not that long ago was that they solved the protein folding problem. And so now we can kind of custom create proteins that target very specific tasks, which is a very cool thing to be able to do, right? So maybe there's beings that have that kind of technological capacity, understanding proteins and you know, genes and stuff like that, and they could build a being that way. But there might be other ways. I mean, especially if we're dealing with beings that have this kind of higher dimensional capacity, like it's very hard to even imagine what's possible here, right? Like when we're talking about, let me say that you have an additional spatial dimension, for instance, right? Like people talk about, you know, like tesseracts or imagine a fourth spatial dimension, then an object could just apparently appear out of nowhere from our perspective, from our kind of three-dimensional spatial perspective, because it would be in a fourth dimensional space and then it would move into this space. It would just look like a solid object appeared out of nowhere, right? Like, okay, well, if there's beings that can do that, then who knows what kinds of things they could do engineering-wise and how they could even do it, right? Like you could manipulate three-dimensional bodies on the inside without cutting them open, because you could just go through from an extra dimensional space. So like, you know, once we're talking about higher dimensional beings, either like additional dimensions in space or additional dimensions in time or additional dimensions of different kinds that we can't even imagine, I don't know how you could even begin imagining what's possible. So, I don't know. Cool. That's cool stuff to think about. But
yeah, that's the stuff that cool to think about slash gives me a headache. Uh-huh. Because, you know, some of that dimensional stuff, I love simplicity because I'm a simple guy. And seeing some of those videos where people explain 2D, 3D, 4D, yep. And it's like a little stick man and a 2D stick man in a 3D world would look like this. And then, like you say, the idea that if you looked at it side on, you wouldn't see anything but a line, but then you come round in a 3D world, you see the flat image of the 2D, and I'm probably explaining that wrong, but the gist is there. And then when you go to fourth dimension, it's like, then some of that stuff to me starts to make a little bit of sense that if this is stranger than we're led to imagine, that these craft appearing aren't necessarily all flying in the air, yeah. And that they're coming through to our plane of existence, our dimension, our reality. I've even thought, like, is there a chance these craft in their own dimension or reality aren't even moving, but it's almost like they're in like a solid, you know, they've gone into like a room, quantum leap style, you know, and these craft look like they're moving about to us, but they're not. That's in a solid state, stuck somewhere, but it's just how they appear and come through here. And it gets really strange when you start to think about all this kind of stuff.
Really, really strange. I mean, by the way, like that thing you just described is how warp drives work, right? Like, I mean, science fictionally and theoretically, and who knows if they work or whatever actually, but the way the concept of a warp drive is an object at rest in a bubble of space, and it's the space that's moving. Yeah. Not the craft moving through the space, which is why it can exceed the speed of light in principle, because it's not actually traveling, it's not actually traversing space and light. So that's right. I'm actually giving a talk here at OSU to the philosophy and OSU and UFO clubs at the same time on a higher dimension of time. I'm calling it hyper time, because I guess I'm becoming somewhat famous slash infamous for being a person who changes my mind in several videos. I've poo-pooed the idea of the aliens or the non-humans being from the future, because with all these philosophical problems with time travel. But yeah, I was talking to my my friend Michael Glosson, who I met when I was at Yale doing the teach-in there with the New Paradigm Institute. I've been talking to him off and on ever since, and he and I had a really fascinating conversation about hypertime and how that might relate to concepts like time travel and higher dimensional, you know, temporal beings who don't relate to time in the same way that we do. And so, yeah, I've finally put together like a pretty elaborate slide deck on this. So those of you who like this stuff, watch my YouTube channel, in the not too distant future. Maybe by the time this goes up, it'll be up. If not within a few days, it'll be up, because I'm talking about that stuff. I'm not so interested personally in the hyperspace, like higher dimensions of space stuff. That's relatively straightforward, all things considered. Like, it's very baffling, but it doesn't really introduce a lot of philosophical problems. Mm-hmm. Whereas moving around in time creates a lot of philosophical problems. You know, the grandfather paradox, and you know, what about, how does this impact things like our capacity to freely? And so, you know, I'm trying to hash out that stuff. Anyways, I think I have a few interesting things to say there. So if you care about that stuff, watch for that video soon.
Yeah, we talked, was it not on the Patreon exclusive stuff or like the paid feeds about time travel and your favorite movie or why you like some of the theories and some of them why you didn't, which is pretty cool. What was your favorite time travel movie again?
It's definitely Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. The scene towards the garbage can scene with at the police station is brilliant. Yeah. But yes, my objection to time travel has always been this concern about closed causal loops. And the reason I like this hypertime hypothesis is it allows you to eliminate closed causal loops. So it's potentially very promising.
There we go. I'll put the link for that. Probably I might forget, but not, do you know what I won't? I'm going to be really unprofessional and just type YouTube channel right now into my notes, folks. So all of you folks out on YouTube land who particularly go, oh, Andy, you mentioned this around 2916 mark. Why haven't you linked this? I'd like you to do that. And it's like, you Googled it yourself, but you've spent your time emailing or commenting to me who spent his time making this. But no, that's fine. That's me being lazy. So I'll put that down there for you as well. Let's crack on, Stephen. So Purple Burglar. My favorite of all the names, but the hardest to say.
Hello.
Says, hello, Andy. I'd like to know your thoughts on the new revelations about the massive cylindrical pillars being found under the Egyptian pyramids. They say they are over 600 meters deep, and I can't think of any past civilization that could do anything of that magnitude. What purpose do you think they serve, and will the Egyptian government ever let anyone excavate under the pyramids to find out? Now, Stephen, let me add, a few folks did comment underneath this comment on the Patreon to give like the Snopes fact check article on this and say, look, this has been kind of debunked already and whatnot. Am I right in saying it has not been completely debunked, but there is a lot of myth going around this and a lot of misinformation as to what's actually going on? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm following this relatively closely just because of my level of interest in the possibility, but I'm not an expert in any of this stuff. From what I understand, there was this paper a couple of years ago demonstrating this capacity to use a radar technique to perceive what is under the surface somehow. That paper is itself controversial. Quite a few people have raised concerns about the ways in which they're extrapolating from the data that they get from this. But that's not actually the thing that has been in the news lately. There was a conference, I think it was like a 4-hour presentation that happened whatever a week or two ago, where there's been elaboration using this technique that allegedly they've been able to perceive quite far below the pyramids, the Giza pyramids and the Giza plateau in general, and that they've located a whole lot of structures of some kind that appear to be pillars and maybe large boxes that are connected somehow. So, yes, from what I understand, there's not an academic paper yet. There's apparently one in the works, that's kind of the product associated with that presentation. We don't have it yet. I've watched a little bit of the kind of scientists, people who understand sensors, reflecting on this, and, there is apparently some promise to the technique, although it's a controversial technique. And so, I mean, again, kind of disappointingly, it looks like the answer is we don't have an answer right now. And we need to wait to find out more. But as far as like the government of Egypt allowing people to excavate, I mean, I assume at some point there might be a reason to excavate, but obviously they're not going to be quick to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, what would be interesting here is if it is underground, then, I mean, you could come in at an angle, like you wouldn't have to disturb any of
tunnel down.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't have to disturb the pyramids themselves. You could start from someplace else and tunnel down to see if there was anything there. And I don't know. I don't understand how archaeological permits work, but I would imagine that if there's any kind of confirmation about this technique working and then, you know, following up on this, and it does look like there's something down there, that there would be interest in doing some kind of a responsible excavation.
Yeah, I think people, something you said there is something a lot of folks in 2025 particularly don't like, is that we will have to wait. And that is not something, I'm not particularly good with waiting, but I think when it comes to this kind of archaeology, when it comes to any kind of science, you know, we talk about the Nazca mummy stuff or study of metamaterials, people don't like the idea that folks like yourself, Stephen, can't take a sample of sample A in my hand here. Stephen, I'm handing it over to you right now. Run it through the machine and tell me if this is alien. That's what people think. And I don't know what does happen, but it sounds to me like the processes are a lot more complicated, and it takes time. And it can be weeks and weeks and weeks of study and testing to find out, okay, it's not this. No, but what is it? Well, we don't know yet, but we know it's not this. So now we move on to this. And that requires funding. But a lab in this continent has this machine, and they can do it in 2 months' time for you, maybe. And that's what happens with this kind of stuff. But to speculate on the pyramids, what's your take on this idea? And I think it's a standard interest for anyone who comes into anything, either ufology, paranormal, whatever it may be, ancient wonders. The pyramids growing up was something I remember getting my Encyclopedia Britannica.
And
putting the CD into my PC.
Oh, you got the CD version.
Books
on shelves.
God, you're so old.
I also got the CD as well.
But I remember as a kid getting that, and it was like, wow. And I remember like making a project, which was essentially me printing off the pages on the pyramids and putting them in a binder. And it's the whole idea of, did aliens build the pyramids? Was it human made? And I've got some questions on that as well. But what's your general take on the pyramids, the idea they were built by something else, or at least with the help of something else?
Yeah. I wanted to quickly comment on the impatience thing. Like, hey, the capacity to become a radar technician, physicist, scientist is available to everybody. If you guys want to get faster answers, go study some physics and learn how radar reflections work, and then you'll be fine. And if you don't know how to do that, then be kind to the people who have other things to do with their lives besides answer your question. And obviously very few of us are getting money to do any of this. This is all fun side projects for most of us. Anyways, things on the fringe don't pay the bills. But yes, I mean, much to say about the Egypt stuff that's different from what anybody else has said. Like, there's definitely something very puzzling about the artifacts that we see in Egypt. There's the well-known puzzle. The oldest stuff seems to be the best stuff, which is very strange, right? That usually you would expect older stuff to look more primitive, more rough, less delicate and technically accomplished, and you would expect the quality to increase over time as there's this accumulation of understanding and technology and stuff, right? But that's not how it is in Egypt. The oldest stuff looks way better than the newer stuff, and that's peculiar. And it doesn't, you know, there are these puzzles about, you know, circular drill holes and very finely machined, very hard stones. Are not machined, but I don't know, they might be machined, but if they were, that's wild, because from what we understand, the Egyptians they might not have even had the wheel. They didn't have any metal harder than than copper. And so our best guesses about how they could have made things, where they're doing this very delicate work with hard stone, is like getting a piece of copper and putting like sand, like, you know, quartz crystals, or so, yeah, anyways, sand and scraping it a lot. Right. And like, yeah, sure, you can do things like that, but it takes a long time and, it's very labor intensive and difficult. And apparently, and I'm no expert here, but apparently there are some very surprising, structures. In particular, there's these large hard stone sarcophagi, that are big boxes that are very precisely, shaped. And it's difficult to imagine how we would make such a thing now with our modern tools. So yes, there's definitely puzzles, about,
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Egyptian or potentially pre-Egyptian artifacts. Now, again, if all things considered, you already have reasons to believe David Grush and Lou Elizondo and people like that, that there are some evidence that we've been engaging non-humans for a while. I think Grush actually said, I don't remember if it was in the congressional testimony, but it was in one of the interviews in that time period that some of the recovered craft had been archaeological, that we found them somewhere on an archaeological site. And to my knowledge, he's not given any details about that. But if that's correct, right, then okay, then all of these surprising things, if there are non-humans around engaging with us, then it's quite likely that some of these unanswered questions from the past could be answered by engage with non-humans in one form or another. So yeah, in principle, this all seems very plausible to me now that I'm convinced that we've had, you know, non-human contact going on for quite some time. But, you know, the devil's in the details and, you know, which things are alien in some sense, which things are higher dimensional in some sense, which things are human civilizations that we lost somehow or non-human civilizations that are from this planet. Like, there's so many options on the table that, this is the fun/frustrating thing being where we are right now is, given how little we understand, the only thing we can do is keep a very open mind and try not to jump to conclusions, right? Like we do need the data to give us the actual answers.
If we do find out in the coming months or years that there are 600 meter pillars under the pyramids, and then God knows what's underneath those potentially, you know. How does that change the conversation around how these were built? And do you think that does then seep into the public consciousness that these weren't humans? We didn't put 600 meter pillars underneath these pyramids. Do you think that would change things substantially?
I mean, whether we would move to aliens or some kind of very advanced human or pre-human civilization, I don't know how you would distinguish easily between those two. But yeah, like it would certainly challenge, put a lot of pressure on this idea that it was just, you know, the Egyptians that we know about using copper and sand and a lot of determination, right? Like that seems, the more complex the structures are, the deeper below the ground, et cetera, you know, the less likely it is that that explanation is going to be the best explanation, all things considered. So yeah, it could really be, it could be a big breakthrough. So, you know, and for that reason, people are going to be very skeptical about it and rightly so, right? Like we don't want to jump to these conclusions prematurely. So, stay tuned. I mean, there have been some very striking underground city discoveries, right? There's this place, Derinkuyu in Turkey, that some guy was in the 60s, was like working in his basement, and then he found this room behind his behind the wall, and it turned out to be this massive underground city that looks like it could occupy or could be occupied by like 20,000 people. But the depth of that is like 85 meters. What's the claim on the pyramid?
600.
That's wild.
That's substantial. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I remember at least seeing one person who was skeptical about this claim. Like, you know, if you, that pyramid is very, very heavy. And if you dug 8 holes underneath it, I don't know, like structurally, how that all works out.
Yeah.
On, what those holes are made of and whether they're reinforced and like, you know, lots of fascinating questions here. But right. If it turns out that there are these, there's this claim made by the presenters, that there's like evidence of some kind of spiral staircase structure going down there. And yeah. Wow. If there's like a 600 meter deep spiral staircase and then a huge underground, okay, like that's weird.
It could just be that hollow earth theory is correct and this is just the air conditioning system for it. No, it's just sucking the air down and it's like, you guys just could be keeping up there. It's a bit dusty in those pyramids, you know. Everything's on the table with it, but I think I'm with you. We have to wait. Like, you have to wait and see.
We do. I mean, the hollow earth stuff, like, you know, not hollow, but is the kind of stone structure of the earth stable and cool enough and warm enough quite a ways down to be able for there to be a lot of space? Yeah, there really is. Whether that would need to be excavated or, you know. And again, like if we're imagining whatever these beings are that we seem to have reasons to believe in and do these very peculiar maneuvers, I don't know where people are with Jake Barber, but Jake Barber was saying that, you know, the kind of transmedium from the air through the earth, right? And other people have made this claim too, that the UFOs, they don't just travel from space and through air and through water. They seem to travel through solid objects.
Yep.
If that's true, then of course you're going to build something under the ground, right? Like you just go down there, however you're doing this, and clear out some space. And like, you could make a lot of space underground. Like if you just like imagine the biggest city you want, like Beijing, or New York City, and then like how many of those could you put down a few layers? A lot of them. There's just huge amounts of space underground, and the stone is relatively stable. So if you could somehow excavate that, which, you know, if you're talking about something that can work through a fifth dimension, like no problem. Just like I was saying earlier, you could surgically alter someone without cutting open their body. You could excavate holes without digging, right? Like you could just go in from another dimension and empty that out and then go hang out in that hole. So like, yeah, if there's things that can do that, then kind of all bets are off as far as what's under the earth. And for that matter, what's under any solid body in the universe, right? Like, then you could go inside of Mercury because the surface is super hot. You could go inside of Venus. Because below the surface, I don't know much about the geology of Venus, right? But like, As long as it's not molten, then you should be able to occupy it if you have these, you know, capacities to traverse through solid objects. Yeah. So yeah, this is the problem with having this kind of very broad scope, like wide aperture way of thinking about what might be possible, which is where we seem to be. But like, once that many things is possible, anything's possible. Not anything, but like a lot is possible.
Well, since you brought it up, you mentioned Jake Barber. What's your take on this whole Skywatcher situation? Do you know, it's really, in a way, surprised me, but in a way hasn't. The reaction has been really divisive to Skywatcher and Jake Barber. I think initially it seemed people were like, oh, wow, here's a proper, genuine whistleblower who's worked on the crash retrieval programs. This is what we've all been waiting for. And very quickly, I think what it seems, just my opinion, that Skywatcher as an entity being announced caused a lot of concern and wariness around Jake Barber's story and their involvement in this whole topic. What's your take been on that?
So I've not spoken to Jake, so I want to just say that from the beginning. I have spoken to some people who have spoken to Jake. I've not spoken to him directly. There's a lot to say here. So, as someone who believes David Grush, believes Lou Elizondo, the idea that he was involved in recovery of these eight guns, which I guess are like flying saucers with eight sections on them or something, these large egg-shaped objects that, like, I mean, I believe him, right? Like, it's hard to say. I mean, so this is one of these things, like, increasingly this idea that somebody's making a mistake doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, I know when David Grush came out, a lot of people were saying, you know, well, it doesn't look like he's lying, but maybe it's this echo chamber problem, right? Like somebody was led astray and then somebody else was led astray and then they talk to each other and they don't check it. And there's this kind of accumulation of like just accumulated accidental error, right? This call that the echo chamber hypothesis. The echo chamber hypothesis doesn't work for somebody like Jake Barber, right? Who said, I flew a helicopter over and picked up a flying saucer, right? At least twice. Is what he's said. And, you know, it doesn't work for Lou Elizondo, who says, I've seen 4K footage of things that are obviously not ours pulling off these very unusual kinds of maneuvers, right? Okay. Well, like either those people are themselves lying to us or, I mean, look, in Jake Barber's case, he has to be lying to us. If it's not true, he's lying, right? Like he couldn't be mistaken about flying a helicopter out, picking up a flying saucer, and then bringing it somewhere else. Like, he either picked up a flying saucer or he didn't, and he says he is, so he's either lying or he's telling the truth, right?
But see, on that, Stephen, though, that almost now seems redundant. Like, people don't talk about that part of the story. People are now obsessed with the psionics, the summoning of, and I'm going to say craft in quotation marks, because Diana Pasulka, when I spoke to her, Diana was very much reticent to say, I'm not saying these are craft, let's call them craft, but we don't know what's being summoned, which is a very fair point.
Yep.
This is what people are getting at, because I think once you make that claim, well, that's a very obvious, you know, tangible, cool, I can summon spacecraft. Okay, do it now. Well, I can't do it now. Right, right. Okay, when can you do it? Show me. Have you got the evidence? And this is what people are really latching on to now, and not unfairly.
Yeah. No, okay. So, but this is why it is important to keep these things distinct. And I mean, I agree, Jake is a controversial character, largely for this reason, right? Like, but I mean, nonetheless, what I said before is true, right? Like, he's either lying to us that he picked up flying saucers, or he's telling the truth. And that is separable from this whole question about psionics and summoning and things like
100%,
that.
100%, yeah.
So, that being said, how skeptical should we be about this summoning kind of telepathic contact kind of thing? In my view, at this point, not hugely skeptical, right? Like if, again, like once you've gone through the basics of the paradigm shift, right? Like once you believe that UFOs are real and that they are somehow related to non-human intelligent beings, then very quickly, like basically immediately, you need to start taking all of these encounters that people have had seriously, right? Like the aerial school case in Africa, right? All these kids who see this flying saucer, these grays come out and they talk to them telepathically about the dangers of the environmental degradation and becoming, you know, too connected up with our technology, right? Like, okay, well, like lots of people who say that they see these beings say they look similar, and the people who say that they see them say they communicate telepathically. So like, if there's anything to any of this, then you can't really draw a line between, okay, I believe in flying saucers, but I don't believe in telepathy, right? And
sure.
And for me, like, you know, as a person who's studied religion, telepathic stuff is fairly normal, right? Like if you, especially in the Indian religions, the Indic traditions, there's these things called the siddhis, S-I-D-D-H-I-S, which are these capacities that people get as they get closer and closer to enlightenment. And they're very peculiar, right? They're like telepathy and clairvoyance and levitation and biolocation and all this kind of stuff, right? And there's stories told by lots of these people in these traditions that they met monks who could do these kinds of things. And I mean, there's this very intriguing book by Carlos Aire out of Yale called They Flew, which is about Christian monks who are, you know, in the standard lore of who they are and what they did, they could levitate. And okay, like, you know, and then there's all the telepathy tape stuff, which I'm inclined to take pretty seriously. So again, and you know, the DOPS stuff with, the Division of Perceptual Studies at University of Virginia with the, you know, near-death experiences and, past life memories. And like, there's a lot of evidence actually for peculiar psionic kinds of things, right? It's just that we don't tend to pay much attention to it, which is actually quite surprising because, you know, if you get into the modern physics stuff, quantum mechanics in particular, there does seem to be this impact that the mind has on the world. And, you know, there's even evidence that if you direct your mind at a random number generator, you can make modest changes in the numbers that get randomly generated, that within some amount of statistical significance. That's true. We know that, we all know about the placebo effect, right? Like when we do medical research, we have to rule out whether you even know you're getting the drug or not, because whether you think it will help you or not impacts how your body reacts. So, yeah. So like, again, right? Like once you kind of take even one step down the rabbit hole of these paranormal phenomena, then it's not crazy to think that some of these things like psionic powers are real if any of the other stuff turns out to be real. So it all kind of comes together, right? Like if you're going to believe in flying saucers, you kind of have to believe in telepathy. So so the fact that he said he picked up a flying saucer, it doesn't surprise me that he also says that there's some kind of telepathic connection to them. Maybe we can summon, maybe we can communicate. There's other issues. Did you want to jump in there? Because I know I've been talking a lot, but
no.
Because Barbara is also interesting for other reasons, two in particular. I mean, there's the question of whether any of this can be used.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Entrepreneurially, right? So apparently Skywatcher is funded privately by parties who are trying to do independent UFO recoveries so that they can use those objects as, you know, mechanisms for reverse engineering or sources of scientific knowledge or something. You know, outside of the government, I mean, this is a little bit like Avi Loeb's thing, right? Like the sky belongs to everybody. We don't need the government to tell us what's going on. We can just go look. So Skywatcher is sort of like that, but with this particular kind of entrepreneurial capitalist kind of an edge to it, which, you know, you might have, I do have mixed feelings about, right? Like, well, we could talk about that if you want, but like, I have,
I've got no issue with the fact they're privately funded. I actually prefer the fact they're privately funded to what sounds like substantial sums of money. This is through things like the SALT conference, and those folks there are entrepreneurial. They are there with some big money to listen to people pitching big ideas. And these are people with millions of dollars at disposable income to think, do you know what? I'm going to go throw some money at this.
Yeah.
See what it takes is, and do you know what? If I lose my $2.5 million, I lose it. But if this pays off, that money more than quadruples, quintuples, whatever you want to say, it goes up X amount. So I'm happy they're funded that way, because otherwise they come out and they have to start asking the UFO community for money, which always has a look to it, whether it's good or bad. So I'm glad they're privately funded, but I do get, there seems to be a lot of mud, and of course there is, it's the UFO topic, where even Gary Nolan, who was heavily involved in the initial video that was put out, when I spoke to Gary Nolan, and I know he said this on other shows as well, he's very quick to say he will not be involved with this organization at all if they are summoning or trying to attract these craft for the purposes to harm them, shoot at them, or capture them. But then there seems to be mixed messages around what's happening, like you say, who else is involved, why there's an involvement now, Arrow being involved potentially in this. It gets very messy. One of the underlying things I've spoken to a couple of folks about now, Stephen, is, and it gets a little, it's all speculation, that's what this topic is largely, is the idea that Jake Barber and co. are doing this so publicly because it's a kind of veiled message to the folks in the background who are in charge of this topic, in charge of the secrecy, to say, look, you know what we are doing here. We've got a public image and a presentation here. You know, we can kind of do this. It might be rough, but you know what the results can be. And this is almost a chance for them to reach out privately and say, look, okay, hold it there. Come in and talk to us. Let's see if we can't move forward perhaps together or with a little bit more control to this. Almost they're threatening to go a bit rogue with what they know.
Yeah,
I don't know, but that's something I've heard from a few folks now.
Yeah, good. So I just want to quickly note that the other concern that Gary was expressing is also my concern, right? Like the stories that got told about the recoveries that he was contracted to do, his team did talk about these kind of electromagnetic or whatever kinds of weapons that they were using to like knock them out of the sky, right?
Yeah.
I think this is profoundly unwise. And
like fishing with dynamite, but with UFOs.
Well, fishing for whales with dynamite while you're in a tiny little ship or something. Like, who even understands what we're dealing with and what kinds of ways we might make them angry in a very justified way and what they might do in response to that? Like, that seems profoundly foolish. So I just want to second Gary's intuitions there. Like, no one's asking me to be involved in Skywatcher, but if they were, I would be like, hey, are we making sure that we're thinking about the ethics of this situation? That is something I know about. I'd be concerned. But yeah, as far as the other idea, I would love it. I mean, anything we can do to put some pressure on the secret keepers to be a little more proactive in figuring out what to do with these secrets is a good idea. So, if kind of going rogue or going independent, and trying to do privately owned recoveries puts more pressure on the secret keepers to get their act together and talk to the Visible College and, get a bunch of people thinking about how to do this, then that's a good idea, right? I mean, there's increasingly, there's been a lot of these rumors around that, I think it was Hal Putoff was saying that there was this like gathering of people who kind of gamed out if these things were true, whether they should be released to the public. And apparently the consensus was no. Then what's the plan exactly? Because, we can't just keep secrets like this forever. Somebody at some point needs to let these things out to the public, and whatever the problems are, we actually need to be thinking about what the solutions are, not just avoiding them forever. Eventually it'll bite us in the ass. So, anything anybody can do to get the secret keepers to actually be in conversation with the relevant people to think about how we overcome the problems of disclosure rather than just perpetually postponing.
Yeah. We are talking about ancient influence here. And does this all come back to the fact that you can't just come out and tell the public, okay, here it is, we're not alone, and leave it there? There then that conversation snowballs and tumbles, and you've ripped the Band-Aid off, and you've exposed the wound. And it's not just what it's a big wound. There are multiple wounds. Let's come off of wounds, actually. You're making a huge, huge kind of crater in the public psyche. Academia, I imagine, goes wild. Scholars go wild. Everything suddenly becomes, wait a minute, is this correct? Is this right? Okay, is this theory that we've always poo-pooed, is there substance to it? And it just changes everything too much. So you can't just come out and say, yeah, do you know what? There was a crash at Roswell. It happened a long time ago, but we don't know much more than that. You can't just leave it there.
No, you can't say that. No. Yeah, that's right. Because everybody would be like, wait, what do you mean? Like, what have we learned? Did they say anything? What did they say? Right. Why didn't you tell us about this before? So like immediately there's going to be this level of concern about, if you lied to us about something that big, what else have you been lying to us about? And why have you been lying? And what have you been hiding? Like, is this really about, trying to keep the oil industry going? Because if we have access to some kind of novel energy technology, then that would be so disruptive that it would collapse the global economy. Like, okay, that is a very serious concern. So that should be done with great care. But what's the transition plan? Like, the transition plan isn't to just keep burning fossil fuels, right? Because that would be crazy. Like the transition plan can't just be drill, baby, drill, because that would be crazy. And yet, if this is all true, right, that there are these craft that have novel energy technologies, et cetera, all these things that have been rumored for decades, then it kind of immediately follows that, yes, some people have been making the decision to perpetuate environmentally destructive, secret kinds of programs or whatever, so that we don't disrupt the status quo too much. Like, wow, that's not a very good reason for keeping something like this that private. And I mean, it does, I've speculated a lot about how this might impact religious communities, since I'm a philosopher of religion primarily. And I do suspect that, it depends on what the details are. So in many ways, the kind of Indic traditions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, et cetera, the smaller indigenous traditions that we see all over the place, they all believe in sky people, sky nations, beings who have communicated with us and taught us things, who know more than us, some of whom can be trusted, some of whom can't, all of whom are perplexing, right? And kind of dangerous in the sense that, like, you're dealing with something very different and it's easy for things to go wrong. Like, that's kind of the standard wisdom of all of the people, except for the kind of Western mindset, which is basically a disjunction between either be an atheist materialist like Neil deGrasse Tyson, or believe in one of the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam. And yeah, like, you know, there could be details there. Like, I think it was, oh my gosh, what's his name? The guy who says he has element 152 in his garage.
Bob Lazar.
Yes, thank you. Bob Lazar has said on interviews that he saw a document, which was some kind of an interview with a non-human who said that whoever these beings are, like, created / engineered some of our spiritual leaders as ways of kind of seeding these, you know, profound, important spiritual ideas. And if that turned out to be true, and so say, for instance, that the best explanation of the virgin birth of Jesus of Nazareth and some, you know, his extraordinary capacities and even his extraordinary wisdom, say that there was an explanation being offered by some of these beings, that that's because he's a hybrid or something, then wow, that would be hugely disruptive to the Christian community, right? Because there's a very well articulated and very delicately articulated set of theology about who Jesus of Nazareth was and how he relates to God and all that kind of stuff. And if that turned out to be not true, or even if there were beings as powerful and bizarre as these are who are saying that it's not true, that could be like hugely disruptive, right? Like that could be the kind of thing that would divide the entire Christian community, right? Between the people who were willing to kind of consider that as a possibly true thing versus the people who would say this is a demonic deception. Like, who, regardless of what the truth turned out to be in the end, the variety of perspectives about something that important to that many people would be, yeah, massively disruptive. And, you know, again, like, we live in a very unstable world, right? Right. Like, you and I were talking before we started recording about, you know, the political instability or the political divisiveness, at least, that we see in the world. And, you know, we weren't talking much about the potential for war, but, you know, if you look at the large scale geopolitical situation, like, it's dangerous. And so if you throw something that disruptive into the middle of this right now, like, yeah, imagine what some of our like big loudmouthed politicians would do with a claim that explosive. No matter what they do with it, it's going to, you know, add to this divisiveness that we're already experiencing. And again, that's independent of whether it's even true. Right. So yeah, it's a mess.
Stephen, we're hitting the hour mark. So what we'll do is I'm going to say this is the end of part one. And if folks are listening on the free feeds, it'll be another day or so before part two comes out. If you're on the paid feeds, that's on Patreon, Apple and Spotify or YouTube. If you sign up and pay for the podcast, there's free trials and stuff available. Then you'll get to carry on the conversation with myself and Stephen. But otherwise, that'll be the end of part one and we'll carry on with part two.
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Chumba. Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.